From Tidbits on May 6th, 2015, this is Google Takes You to Abbey Road by Jeff Duncan. In music, the phrase in the studio has always carried a certain cachet with both performers and listeners, and perhaps no studio in the world is better known than Abbey Road Studios in London, opened in 1931 and famously where, in the 1960s, the Beatles and producer George Martin largely redefined popular music. Now, Google has devoted some of its engineering and web expertise to create Inside Abbey Road, an online, interactive tour of Abbey Road Studios that enables users to virtually walk through the studio's rooms, history, and technology, and check out famous recordings made there, from the classic albums of the Beatles and Pink Floyd to well-known movie soundtracks and the work of more contemporary artists like Oasis, Florence and the Machine, and Sam Smith.
Oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, we both know the truth.
Virtual walkthroughs and guided tours aren't new. After all, games have been doing essentially the same thing for decades. But Google has built Inside Abbey Road using just web technologies available in modern browsers, HTML5, CSS, high-resolution imaging, web audio, and WebGL, to handle navigation, visual panoramas, ambient audio, seamlessly integrated video, and interactive gadgets. Even a few years ago, this project would have been unthinkable without Adobe Flash, and now it works on tablets and even phones, as well as traditional notebook and desktop computers. Is Google's effort worth your time? If you have any curiosity about how a world-class recording facility works, or just enjoy the tremendous range of artists that have recorded at Abbey Road over the years, then the answer is yes. About Abbey Road. The building where Abbey Road Studios is located was built in the 1830s as a large Georgian townhouse. Eventually, it was converted to apartments,
flats in British English.
And in 1931, the Gramophone Company bought the somewhat dilapidated property and converted it to recording spaces. Abbey Road currently has three primary studios, aptly named Studio 1, Studio 2, and Studio 3. In the 1930s, the Gramophone Company, you might remember their His Master's Voice label with a dog, was primarily concerned with recording classical music, so Studio 1 was designed to simultaneously handle a very large orchestra and a small audience, making it both a recording and performance space, an idea that's more or less continuous in Abbey Road's history, as we'll see. Studio 1 can lay claim to being the world's largest purpose-built recording studio. While plenty of recordings are made in larger places, those were typically built as concert halls, chapels, and theaters, not dedicated recording facilities. If you're a reader of a certain age, you've seen Studio 1, the Beatles' portion of the 1967 Our World live satellite program, featuring All You Need Is Love, was broadcast from Studio 1 and viewed live by over 400 million people.
The supervisor is George Martin, the musical brain behind all the Beatles records. There's the orchestra coming into the studio now, and you'll notice that the musicians are not rock and roll youngsters. The Beatles get on best with symphony men.
The smaller Studio 2 and Studio 3 are at the heart of British rock and pop music, with Abbey Road Rock and Roll first getting on the charts with Cliff Richard in the late 1950s.
Come on, pretty baby, let's move it and a groove it. Yeah, let's shake, oh baby, shake, my honey, please don't lose it.
Abbey Road's role in British pop music, of course, truly emerged with the Beatles, who recorded almost all their albums in Studio 2 with producer George Martin. George Martin got started at Abbey Road recording comedy albums with the likes of Peter Sellers. When I say Studio 2 and Studio 3 are smaller, I mean it in a relative sense. I've worked in recording studios since my teens, and few are as large as Abbey Road's small studios. As a physical room, Studio 2 is much the same as when the Beatles recorded there, complete with tall wheeled baffles used to change the shape of the space, and the deliberately out-of-tune tack piano, named for the once popular but now mostly forgotten sing-along performer Mrs. Mills. If that piano sounds familiar, that's because you've heard it. Paul McCartney used the piano on Lady Madonna and other Beatles tracks. Studio 3 is where Pink Floyd famously didn't recognize former frontman Syd Barrett while recording Shine On, You Crazy Diamond, one of several tributes they made for him. Studio 3 has been updated to a more contemporary space, complete with Abbey Road's famous mirrored drum room straight out of the 1980s. One way to make drums sound bigger is to record them in a very live room where almost every surface reflects sound. The mirrors probably have something to do with mullets. Google's tour of Abbey Road also highlights a mastering suite where recordings are equalized, processed, and prepared for distribution, whether that's directly to digital services, a compact disc, or cutting on a vinyl lathe. Yes, Abbey Road will still make proper records if clients ask, and one of the studio's neatest artifacts is a stereo cutting head developed by Alan Blumlein in the 1930s, decades before stereo became a standard for phonograph recordings. 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. 31, 32, it still works. 34, getting around. If you've used Google Street View, you can navigate Google's tour of Abbey Road. Users can get a real sense of the studio's physical space, go up and down Studio 2's famous stairs, explore the corners, and audio geeks can zoom in on racks of equipment to read all the labels. For fun, find all the silver Mac Pro towers. They're visible in every control room. There's not a new Mac Pro to be seen. Google says the site is best experienced with headphones, and that's because they really want you to notice the ambient noises. For instance, as you walk past the large isolation booth off Studio One, the sound of a harpist warming up in there shifts from left to right, and even forward to back, as you pan around. It's legitimately fun. Every location on the tour is festooned with hotspots linking to more detailed information or to videos and pictures of the tremendous variety of artists associated with Abbey Road. Some highlights include Abbey Road's Echo Chamber.
It's a real room, not an electronic effect!
Along with details of the studio's prized microphone collection and features on film scoring, the role of producers, and even Studio One's squeakless chairs for orchestra players. Most of the video is direct from YouTube or Vivo. However, perhaps the most accessible features are three guided tours, voiced by producer Giles Martin.
Hello, I'm Giles Martin.
Abbey Road's head of audio products, Merrick Stiles.
My name is Merrick Stiles.
And Lauren Laverne.
I'm Lauren Laverne.
Giles Martin happens to be George Martin's son. Both his parents worked at the studio. Merrick Stiles was an engineer for 10 years before switching to hardware and software, and Lauren Laverne is perhaps best known as a host on BBC Radio 6 Music. Each tour covers a different portion of Abbey Road, with Martin covering the recording process, Stiles discussing some of the technology and notable work at Abbey Road, and Laverne highlighting personalities and behind-the-scenes moments. The tours are self-paced, so you can look around as much as you like anywhere along the way, and reflect the sound of each space. Google and Abbey Road cheated a bit there. Each host was recorded separately, then the recordings played back on a speaker in each room to capture a bit of each space's sound. It's a common technique. Abbey Road did the same thing to re-record Colin Firth's voice through their EMI PM201 dynamic mic for the film The King's Speech. It's the same microphone King George VI used when declaring war on Germany in 1939.
For the second time in the lives of most of us, we are at war. Over and over again, we have tried to find a peaceful way out.
A peaceful
of the differences.
A way out
between ourselves.
Of the differences between ourselves and those who are now our enemies.
The site also offers a handful of gadgets that enable users to try their hand at mixing audio tracks, creating old-school tape effects, and mixing down four-track recordings, just like the Beatles had to do. Another gadget offers panoramas of microphones so rare and costly, most people will never see them any other way. Let me spill a little bit of Tidbits history here. While I essentially grew up doing music and audio, Adam and Tanya have little musical background, other than truly enjoying music. Ages ago, a few of us went to Seattle's EMP Museum, which features interactive exhibits where visitors with no musical experience can try their hands with real guitars, basses, drums, and other instruments, even mixing boards and turntables. For the record, Tanya was rocking the bass line to Wild Thing in about a minute, but Adam made for a hopeless drummer. The EMP experience highlighted for me how difficult it is to make the stuff accessible for everyday folks. It wasn't just Adam and Tanya who didn't become instant rock stars. Almost everybody was struggling. So, I had very low expectations for the Inside Abbey Road gadgets, but I was pleasantly surprised. Although they aren't particularly intuitive, they do capture and illustrate the key concepts, and the gadget emulating a J37 four-track tape recorder is just a ton of fun, even if it's a skill that literally nobody needs anymore. My only objection is that the gadgets are a bit gamified. Users can compare their results to a preset goal, which might discourage folks with no experience, since their first scores are probably going to be abysmal. I'm also impressed Google was able to pull this off without resorting to Flash or other browser plugins. Web audio really has come a long way. What's not to like? The way Google presents the Inside Abbey Road project is a bit weird. Some of the technology ideas come from the Google Cultural Institute, which attempts to make significant cultural institutions, historical events, and natural wonders virtually accessible to anyone in the world with a decent internet connection. And given the resemblance, one might think Inside Abbey Road was akin to Google's virtual tours of Pompeii, the Bolshoi Theater, or South Africa's Robben Island. Well, it's not. Although the British government recently made Abbey Road Studios a listed site, along with its famous crosswalk,
that's a zebra crossing in the UK,
Abbey Road Studios is not a non-profit cultural institution. Abbey Road is instead a high-profile commercial operation, now owned by Universal Music Group, in a highly competitive industry. Google's Inside Abbey Road essentially amounts to a huge, highly interactive advertisement for Abbey Road Studios, Universal, and many of the artists associated with them. And it sure doesn't take long to be presented with links to buy music via Google Play. But not the Beatles, they're still iTunes exclusive. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of recording studios around the world who love this kind of exposure. And Abbey Road very much wants to promote itself. Although its doors have been open for over 80 years, Abbey Road's survival has never been guaranteed. For instance, despite being purpose-built, Studio One wasn't tremendously well-regarded for classical music. Its reverb time was pretty short, leading Abbey Road to experiment somewhat desperately with ambiophony, using about 100 loudspeakers to augment the studio's reverb. That didn't really work out, and as the market for classical music waned, Abbey Road considered dividing Studio One into smaller spaces. They were able to save Studio One through a smart and inexpensive acoustic retreatment by renowned engineer Ken Townsend, and eventually developed a business recording film and game soundtracks. The digital music revolution and associated decline in record company revenues created lean times for most recording studios, including Abbey Road. Even back in the day, knowledge and a little bit of luck could create world-class recordings without a world-class studio. For instance, Joe Meek's work, like the 1959 Space Skiffle album I Hear a New World, may have been as influential as anything from Abbey Road, but much of it was produced in his flat maybe a mile away. These days, it's more common to record an album on a laptop in a bedroom than shell out for studio time. And London ain't cheap. Only a few years ago, there was serious concern Abbey Road would be torn down and replaced with condominiums, thanks to the financial troubles of then-owner EMI. Abbey Road has long been reinforcing the notion that it is itself a brand and cultural institution. Remember when I said the three main studios are both recording and performance spaces? Some of what you don't see in Google's tour are the studio's in-house restaurant, garden, and bar for handling private events. Google's tour also omits two smaller studios primarily used for mixing. Also consider Live from Abbey Road, a television show that ran for 5 seasons.
That's series in British parlance.
Featuring live, high-definition performances from Studios 1, 2, and 3. Those sorts of live events and filmed sessions are now a big part of Abbey Road's business. The studio and its owners would love to see Playing Abbey Road become as prestigious as playing iconic venues like the Royal Albert Hall, Carnegie Hall, or the Grand Ole Opry, except the performers, not the audiences, would be paying to attend. Does any of this detract from the inside Abbey Road site? A bit. But if you have any interest in how music is made, or the countless artists, engineers, and producers whose creative energy has probably touched us all, don't let it deter you. Abbey Road will probably still be around in a few years, but who knows if the site will be. The web moves quickly, and, unlike Abbey Road, has little regard for its own history. This is Tidbits, sponsored in part this week by Smile, ScanSnap, and Automatic. To follow links, make comments, read related articles, subscribe to our podcast, and get updates via email, RSS, Twitter, Facebook, and our iOS app, visit us at tidbits.com. You might have noticed more audio than usual in a Tidbits recording. I lifted a ton of ambient sound and audio items from Google's Inside Abbey Road itself, so when you visit, the site should sound familiar. No discussion of Abbey Road can omit the Beatles. You'll hear the introduction to the medley on the second side of the Beatles' album Abbey Road, along with Love Me Do, one of the first tracks the Beatles recorded at the studio, All You Need Is Love from the Our World satellite broadcast, Lady Madonna, and A Day in the Life. You can also hear Money and Shine On, You Crazy Diamond from Pink Floyd, both recorded at Abbey Road, Edward Elgar conducting Land of Hope and Glory in Studio One's inaugural performance from 1931, a bit of Howard Shore's score from Lord of the Rings Return of the King, and parts of Debussy's Clair de Lune, both recorded at Abbey Road. Cliff Richard makes an appearance with Move It, and you can hear a bit of Ms. Mills' medley in that famous tack piano.
There's a party somewhere, Gladys.
I've also included excerpts from Walking and Talking, a test film Alan Blumline made in the 1930s demonstrating stereophonic sound. In the 1930s, people. And excerpts from both King George VI's original address announcing Britain's entry into World War II, as well as Colin Firth's dramatization from the film The King's Speech. There's also a bit of Glob Waterfall from Joe Meek's trippy I Hear a Brave New World, also in stereo. Well done, Mr. Meek. More recent Abbey Road artists are represented by Oasis with Stand By Me, Florence and the Machine with Shake It Out, both recorded at Abbey Road, and Nirvana by Sam Smith, performed live in Studio 3. And there's Wild Thing by the Troggs. This has nothing to do with Abbey Road. Tanya, you ever want to borrow a bass, let me know. I'm Jeff Duncan. Thanks for listening.